This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Friday. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Nick Cayley introduced as the new OC for the Texans yesterday. Before we get into some of the audio, our friend Coach Middlescreen, Seth, who is, he doesn't dole out praise like it's Halloween candy or anything. You know,
no,
Middlescreen looks through a very critical lens at a lot of things. He says on his text, and I saw him tweet this yesterday too, Nick Cayley had the most impressive press conference I've ever seen from a Houston Texan. I think he's dead serious about this. Ever seen from a Houston Texan between coaching or GM hires, new free agents, contract extensions, any press conference. He ranks the Cayley press conference yesterday as the number one press conference he's seen.
I'll tell you what.
We should point out, he himself is a coach, so we should point that out. Yeah.
Well, there's something that I find refreshing sometimes when a guy just gets up and just doesn't have a whole bunch of motivational slogans and phrases that he lifted from various self-help books or books about leadership or anything, when it really is just about the nuts and bolts of football. And it feels very much like that. That I think sometimes coaches themselves have a tendency, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to forget that it's a blue collar job. No matter how much money you're making, and no matter how smart you want to think you are, it's about getting things right at the core level of the fundamentals. And he mentioned the fundamentals several times. He mentioned communication, all these things that are very much specifically about coaching football, the teaching of football. The scheme doesn't do squat for you. The old saying, an average plan well executed always beats a brilliant plan poorly executed. Last year, it felt like there was a whole lot of stuff that looked great on the whiteboard, but it was not being executed properly, especially on the offensive line where the fundamentals were crap.
Yep.
So, I like getting back to just, it doesn't have to be rocket science. It's that you just have to be fundamentally sound, and everybody's got to be on the same page. One phrase that he used that I liked a lot was, all 11 players seeing it through the same eyes. I really liked that. And I think it just, without him, as you said earlier, it wasn't like he was trying to specifically address Bobby Sloak's offense, which made it even better that so many things he was saying were, it felt like the exact opposite of the way Bobby Sloak's offense was. And I could see where the appeal was, perhaps, for DeMeco.
No question. Here's Nick Cayley. He mentions all 11 here. I think it's a different cut you're talking about, Seth, than this one. But again, it was a recurring theme throughout that there needs to be synergy with all 11 guys. This is Nick Cayley early on in the press conference about the O-line and protecting C.J. Stroud.
I think it all starts up front, obviously, and it's really all 11. I mean, we all got to be in sync, and I think protection starts, obviously, with communication, with trust and communication, cohesiveness up front, and really having clear, you know, rules in the protection system. So we're going to, you know, we'll be going through that process. Obviously, I got a, you know, history with Cole, dating back to my time in New England when he was our offensive line coach, and I coached the tight end, so I have a really good working relationship and a level of trust with Cole. He's a very good football coach, and I'm excited to go through this process with him.
Yeah,
the clear rules in the protection, that's one thing that I think was very, very much lacking. And I've told you before, there's times where when I watch offensive lines play, I see guys that I know are not dumb guys making what look like stupid mistakes. And a lot of times that comes down to just either the rules being too complicated or them not understanding what exactly they're supposed to be doing on given plays. And when it's not a stupid football player who's doing it, that means there's something systemically wrong, either with the way it's being taught, the way it's being schemed up, whatever it might be. The most glaring example last year, when I was just about lost my mind, was in the Packers game, when you had multiple instances of both the offensive tackle and the running back blocking an interior defender while the actual edge rusher went completely free and unblocked.
Yeah.
And like, that's not because either of those guys are idiots. That's because they did not understand exactly what the hell they were supposed to be doing on that play. And a lot of that comes down to communication, the scheming of the pass protection, which can get very, very complicated. And good coaches have to figure out a way to simplify it in such a way that you can actually execute it. I got really excited when I heard him talk about that stuff.
Yeah, what I would wonder, Seth, is if Nick Caley obviously watched plenty of Texans film before deciding to take this job, and I don't think you would have gotten a good answer to this question yesterday because it was a very forward-looking press conference, and I feel like certainly D'Amico and probably Nick Caley to some degree were not going out of their way, but they weren't going to do anything that was going to trash last year's team or last year's coaching. It just that was not that kind of press conference. But I do wonder what the answer to the question would be like as Nick Caley watches the things you're pointing out, like these just Keystone Cops type mistakes. How fixable does this look? Like, is Nick Caley looking at this like, oh my God, this is such fixable stuff right now? Like this, if they get put in my classroom, this stuff becomes so much easier for them.
I think, yeah, maybe, I don't know if you would say easy because it's always hard no matter what you're doing, but I think there's solutions that Bobby Slowik just didn't have at the ready, because at the core of it all, he's not an offensive line guy. I think he's a passing game guy that's very much on the receivers and quarterback side of things that didn't have a complete and total command of the entire offense.
Yeah.
And I do think that, as many of our listeners and others have pointed out, that, and we had John Gruden, I think, was it John Gruden who talked about tight ends coaches and how valuable they can be?
Yep.
Because they're involved in both the run game and the pass game and blocking in both varieties.
He did.
That, I think that probably appealed to D'Amico, that it felt more like, okay, this guy is that can have command of the entire offense. Because protecting the quarterback is kind of a big deal.
Especially this quarterback, yes.
Yeah.
Because he's our quarterback.
And I know just from listening to offensive linemen and offensive line coaches at times, just complaining sometimes about how the offensive coordinators, they sometimes just don't get it.
Yeah.
They're asking the O-line coach to do stuff that's way harder than the offensive coordinator realizes. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was that type of a situation with the Texans last year.
We're digging deep on the offensive line because that's the part that really needs to get fixed for this team to get to that next level that D'Amico talks about. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about. We heard Nick Caley mention Cole. Cole, obviously, is Cole Popovich, the newly promoted offensive line coach. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the decision to promote Cole Popovich to coach the O-line.
Cole is our offensive line coach to lead that room, just having one voice to lead it. Feel really strong about that. Cole helped a lot of our young players when it came to developing. He had a really great relationship with a lot of guys, and guys think very highly of Cole and what he's able to do. And I think him having a prior relationship with Nick as well, and them being able to work together and them to hit the ground running instantly, I think that also led to my decision, and I know we'll be better for it.
My hope is, Seth, that the relationship between the two, Caley and Popovich, was not a reason why Popovich got the job, that it just happens to be sort of an ancillary benefit that gets them going quicker. Like, at the core, I want this guy to be the O-line coach because he's a really good O-line coach, not because there's a relationship that helps grease the skids for the whole thing. You know?
Right. Yeah, I think that, or that, okay, he checked off a few boxes because he, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
because he had prior experience with Nick Haley.
Yes.
I think that, look, this is what we know about Nick Haley. Haley has been very careful in accepting an offensive coordinator position. He hasn't wanted to step into a situation that he felt bad. He turned down what would have been one of the highest paid positions amongst offensive coordinators in the NFL with the Patriots a couple years ago because, for whatever reason, the situation just didn't quite feel right. I think the fact that Popovich would have worked with Haley for four seasons, you know, and very much closely with him, because Popovich was working with the offensive line and the running backs, and in that time Haley was a tight ends coach in New England. I think that he probably likes him a lot. And to go back to sometimes the challenges that offensive line coaches face, if you're skeptical of Cole Popovich because he was the assistant O-line coach last year and the offensive line didn't play well, there's coaches out there who are probably nodding their head vigorously. There's times where they've been an assistant coach and they know that it could be done differently. And sometimes, especially when you're a young coach and you got some old dinosaur of a coach that's just a blowhard, doesn't actually know all that much, you just got to bite your tongue and grit your teeth and say, all right, this is what they're asking us to do. I got to figure out a way to try to do this. I'm hoping that that's what the situation was last year, that it was a matter of, man, Cole Popovich could only do so much because they were asking him to do things that maybe he didn't philosophically believe in. And his experience with Haley, I don't think Haley, again, because he's been careful about accepting the job, I don't think Haley's just going to be like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. I don't want to work with Popovich necessarily, but okay, cool. If that's what I got to do, I got to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Nick Haley was asked who his influences are coaching-wise, and the question may have been specific to the O-line, and as that question's getting asked, I'm like, please say Dante Scarnecchia. Please say Dante Scarnecchia. Because he was in New England when Dante Scarnecchia, maybe the greatest O-line coach of all time, was there. Here was the answer.
Sure. Yeah. Dante Scarnecchia.
Yes!
You know, I was with Dave DeGuglielmo in 2015. Very good coach. Dante Scarnecchia, long-time New England coach. Influenced a lot of, you know, what I've obviously learned up front in the protection systems. And then, you know, been a part of other ways of doing it, too. But, yeah, in terms of my, you know, the formative stages, it would be, you know, my early years in New England, obviously, with those two.
Yeah. The other ones, we don't care about. Dante Scarnecchia, that was the answer. Those are the two magic words that I wanted to hear answered to that question.
Yeah. It's just, and you got to remember that it's not like everybody who studied under Plato became Socrates, but it's nice to know that they had a good influence.
But I
or
like
vice
the,
versa,
I like,
whichever way that went.
The cut of this Haley guy's jib, though. I think he's
basically Socrates.
He's
is
a
what
quick
you're
study.
Thinking.
Yes. He's Socrates. Absolutely. Yes. So Dante Scarnecchia, the big influence on Nick Haley. What's your confidence level based on one press conference that the offensive line is going to look above average next year?
Plato worked under Socrates, by the way.
Okay.
I think they're going to work under him. Like, you know, he was
right. Subordinate.
He had to milk cows for 20 years before he's allowed to philosophize.
Got a philosopher review every year, like HR. Like, here's what you need to improve. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that I'm pretty confident, honestly, just by virtue of the focus that Nick Haley has.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just tell. This is who he is. He's fundamentally different than Bobby Slowik just in what they focus on. And I think Haley is much more, I mean, everything he talked about, almost every other answer eventually came back to the game starting at the interior offensive line and moving outward, the importance of fundamentals on the offensive line. But whether he was asked specifically about the offensive line or not, a lot of it all came back to that. And I think that bodes well for his relationship with CJ, because I think CJ's probably at the point right now where he's like, just please, just give me somebody that gives me time to actually be a quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah, please. Please give me something to where I can actually trust that I'm going to have time to go through my reads.
Right. And CJ's got a physical element, too, for why he's asking that. It hurts to get hit a lot. We as fans are asking for it because you look at you look at the numbers, and when CJ has time to throw, he's a surgeon. Like, he is really, really good. So, I mean, I really, truly think, man, you get some of this O-line stuff fixed, and it's going to be... They could be off to the races now, man. Now, Bobby Slowick did come up as a topic here in the press conference yesterday. We'll get to D'Amico. Well, let's start there. Hey, Ben, let's go to D'Amico 8 first. How difficult was it to fire Bobby Slowick?
Yeah, it was very hard to let Bobby go. Bobby's a really close friend, as you all know. Bobby's a great friend of mine. We, you know, when I got into coaching, Bobby was the guy who helped me figure it all out. And we were QCs together there in San Fran, so really long relationship there with him. Nothing but love and admiration for Bobby and what he's done. I know he'll be a really good coach in this league as he continues to press forward in his career, and I wish him nothing but the best.
I wonder, the real question, which wouldn't have been appropriate, but that I always think about in situations like this, is... How long does it take Bobby Slowick's wife to forgive D'Amico?
Oh.
I feel like with Bobby, like the guy, the coaches just, they get it. They know the deal. I think Bobby knows it's a results business, and D'Amico had to do what he had to do. Sometimes it's harder for the wives to let go. And they don't hide it, man. There's nothing worse than one of your buddy's wives hates you. Because they don't hide it one damn bit, at least in my experience.
I feel like Bobby, that's on Bobby to get her kind of prepped on this is how the business, like when you, almost like when you marry them, like this is the life you've chosen, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, hey man, I might end up like a mob guy. I mean, like the mob wives know when they get in, there may be jail time, you know, like don't get angry at the feds, you know?
Just like in the mob, when a mob boss kills one of his lieutenants, but then, you know, the wife doesn't know that, and the mob boss is still, you know, giving handfuls of $100 bills to the wife every now and then.
Right, right. They know where
D'Amico
that comes
from. Might every now and then, like, see Bobby's wife. He's like, here you go. Here you go.
Ship some off for Bobby's wife.
You have kids taken care of for school. Okay, here you go.
Landed on his feet. He got a new gig. He'll be okay.
He landed a new gig where also the Texans are still paying him. So he's got the cushiest of all gigs where he's working. He's working for a very minimal amount for the Dolphins while the Texans pick up most of the.
It's a good deal, man. Yeah, the second best job to being a coach is being a fired coach. You know, like so you get that contract, especially in college.
I do feel bad for fired coaches these days because their kids used to be okay. You pick up, you move the family, and then the kids never. They never hear anything about it. But if your kids are old enough to be on social media these days, they're gonna see stuff will come up on their timeline randomly, and it's just 5 years from now somebody's gonna be bashing Bobby Slowick, and their kids are gonna see it.
I would think the firing in that sense is like relief at that point for the kids. Like the hard part's gotta be during the season, watching everybody say what trash your dad is, calling plays or whatever, you know, or going to school. Especially like in junior high where kids are like at the peak of their meanness arc, you know?
Yeah.
Damn, I'm starting to feel bad for these guys now. All right, this was interesting. D'Amico Ryans comparing hiring an OC this time versus hiring an OC when he first became the head coach here and he had to fill out a whole staff.
Yeah, this time, this process, it was it's a little easier. I think knowing what I was looking for and knowing what to look for after being a head coach for 2 years now and seeing how we operate here. And it was an easier, process for me. The first time around becoming a head coach, it was very hectic trying to get a new staff, trying to put everything together. A lot more hectic this time, just being able to take my time, not rush anything, but to think through it, get the right guy, talk to a lot of different people, right, to get a lot of input in what we were doing. So felt much more comfortable this time around.
It makes me feel better, at least, about, you know, the thought that you and I and others had is that, man, it's tough for a first-time head coach in that scramble to actually put together a good staff. And you also maybe, you know, D'Amico hasn't been in the coaching profession that long. So for him to develop a broad network of guys he could reach out to, talk to about various candidates and all of those things, that was probably I don't know if D'Amico would call it a mistake or not, but it was probably a mistake hiring somebody as green as Bobby Slowick, especially. It was somebody he knows now. All right, yeah, there were a lot of things I admired about Bobby Slowick, but I probably wasn't looking at it with a skeptical enough eye about exactly what his plan was for this offense.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, like, I mean, it was a failure. He got fired 2 years in. I mean, so it definitely was a failure. But I would...
Sorry, hamstring cramp.
No worries. I think when you're putting a new staff together, and that's a really good point, too, about D'Amico being still a relatively new coach, you know, not head coach, but like a new coach, doesn't have the network built up. Like if you were hiring somebody who's been a coach already, that's got a bunch of guys who he's vetted in previous job searches to choose from, has asked them all the right questions, all those things. D'Amico probably had not done those things. And there's only 24 hours in a day. So when you're building a new staff, he probably got to have a whole lot more conversations about Nick Caley and the other seven candidates they vetted for this, at least publicly vetted. Than they did last time around. It's interesting. There's a text message here. How much of the pairing, Caley and Popovich, was due to Caserio's input and the Patriots connection? And we don't know. We're trying to get Nick's
37%.
Right. But we're... I think we're going to try to get Nick on before the combine, before you and I leave for Astros next week. So I think we're just trying to nail down a date. So we'll ask him that, like, what was his level of input on this? I do think the optics of the whole thing are very interesting, Seth, in that all the answers to all the questions yesterday were with D'Amico were about what he was doing, who he was talking to, the painstaking effort he was going through. I think it's noteworthy that it was just D'Amico and Nick Caley there and that Nick Caserio was not there. I don't know if they're going out of their way to make it look like, this was definitely D'Amico's hire, because that question has been asked by a lot of people because of who they hired. Because they hired somebody that has 6 years' experience with Nick Caserio, the ultimate skeptics were like, well, looks like Slowick was D'Amico's hire, and that messed up. So now in walks Caserio, like, pulling his pants up like this and saying, all right, my turn, kid. We're going to get my OC. And I don't think it's that way at all. Like, if you don't think that these two collaborate really well together 2 years in, based on everything that we see publicly and hear privately, then I don't know what to tell you. I think they work together, Nick Caserio and D'Amico, really, really well. I guess to answer the question, if I had to guess, and we'll ask Nick about this if and when we get him on next week, I would guess he definitely had input on candidates that he's had experience with. Not so much of like, hey, go hire this guy, but if you're D'Amico Ryans and you're looking at Nick Caley and you're not having in-depth conversations with Nick Caserio about that candidate who he spent 6 years with, then you're not doing your job, you know?
Well, and one of the questions that D'Amico answered very briefly yesterday is somebody asked if CJ had input into the hiring of the OC.
Yeah.
And D'Amico very emphatically said, I hired the OC.
Like a four-word answer, yeah.
So it wasn't a question about Caserio, but I do think that for one, it's kind of a busy time of the year for Caserio right now.
Yes, yes,
so him not being at the press conference yesterday, I didn't even really think about it. I assumed, well, he might be off scouting somebody somewhere, doing a work. I don't know. He's probably doing something somewhere. But I think I could see the division of responsibilities maybe being that, too, is that Caserio's like, listen, I'm here as a resource, but it's your decision ultimately. This is the pure football coaching side of things. This is your decision.
Here was Nick Caley yesterday. You know, I think he's very excited to work with C.J. Stroud, but you guys take a listen here and you tell us. Here's Nick Caley talking about working with C.J. Stroud.
I'm very eager. I'm excited for the opportunity. You know, it's a great opportunity, great people in this organization, and, you know, really looking forward to working, obviously, with C.J. You know, tremendous talent. Competitor, you talk about an ultimate competitor, tough, instinctive, can make plays. So I'm very excited. And as a first time coordinator, to answer your second part of the question, really excited to get an opportunity to evolve this scheme and put, you know, it's not going to be my spin. It's going to be what's best for our players, and it's always going to be what's best for our players. No, we're not pounding a square peg into a round hole. It's going to be based on the strengths of our quarterback, the players, and the guys on this team. So that's what it'll always be, you know, designed around.
There were a couple times that he was asked about C.J. Stroud, and he gave very similar answers to that. He talked about his toughness, talked about his throwing ability and his instinctiveness and all that.
Spin it. He can spin it.
Yeah. I think that in his toughness, he really leaned into it when he emphasized it. I think that's very apparent. One thing you got to remember about Caley right now at this point is that he probably hasn't done nearly as much film work as he would like to. Like, it's just logistically he's moving. He was talking about how on Texans All Access, he's talking about how he's still getting his computer set up and everything. I think there are a lot of specifics about if we had wanted him to dig in deep for how everything was last year. I don't think I'm sure he's watched a bunch, but probably not enough to where he feels really, really comfortable with it. And the scouting of all the players, that's going to be pretty labor intensive. So I don't think, I didn't expect much in the way of specifics about what can you lean into that they were good at? What did CJ do well? What didn't he do well last year? I think most of his admiration of CJ probably, it still comes from afar until he gets more deep into the film.
Yeah, I that was a really good interview that they did with him, by the way, John and Mark. I listened to it last night when it ran on the radio. And one of the other things that came out of that interview, we've got audio from that. Maybe we'll play it later in the show. But they asked him something to the effect of looking at last year's offense. Like, how do you look at last year's offense? And I think in a way where when people hear the question, they're waiting for Nick Caley to be critical in some way, or what can I fix? Like, here are the things I would do different than last year's offense. And I liked his answer because he was more about, like, not what would he do different. It's like, I'm definitely going to watch last year's film, but it's more to take a look at what the guys I'm now going to be coaching do well.
Right, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And that's be very forward-looking about it.
And I know, just because so much has been written about the Patriots, that's one of their huge emphases, is both in personnel evaluation and then in how do you use guys within the game plan. They really lean into, all right, what are this guy's strengths? Let's not worry about what he can't do. Let's really lean into the strengths. And that's a lot of that is stuff that he's going to be able to see some things on film that they did well, particularly at the end of the season in the playoffs in the run game. There were some things that started to click, but he also has to look at it through the eyes of, all right, just because they did something poorly last year, doesn't mean they can't do it. We just got to figure out, all right, what were the reasons they couldn't do it last year? So, there's a whole lot of open-minded diagnosis going on between now and the end of August.
One thing for sure, Nick Caley loves him some Joe Mixon, for sure.
I love his mentality. I love the way he runs. I love the way he finishes. He's a violent runner on contact. He's competitive. I've admired him for a long, long time. So I'm really excited. He's a really good player, and I'm really excited to work with him.
Yeah. So the days of Joe Mixon carrying the ball 20 to 25 times, I think, are still upon us here, maybe. I don't know.
Right, yeah, which as long as, you know, with Mixon, I'm not worried about his age, and I think he might end up being one of these guys like a Derrick Henry that can keep churning out longer than the average. The average running back age, sometimes I think it's a little bit of it's so heavily weighted by guys that roll out early in their careers that there are guys that keep on producing on into their 30 or 31
sure.
year old season. It's just a matter of if this is that guy until he does it. The hip drop tackle, for one, on his ankle, like that was something that's going to injure a lot of running backs no matter how old they are. So I don't look at that as like an age type of injury. So I'm not worried about that at this point. I think you got at least another couple seasons of heavy usage out of Joe Mixon.
I do too. You better. He's under contract, but I'm with you on that. I agree with you. Text message, Jim Adler, Texas Hammer text line. I like where he said, quote, no detail is too small, end quote. Oh, I didn't hear that, but that's a good one, too. No detail is too small. I like
when he was talking about the influence of McVay and Belichick and what he learned from those guys, it goes back to a lot of the stuff that you'd heard about from the Patriots for years and years. I think he did some version of do your job, putting your head down and doing your job, but also the extreme attention to detail and how important that is. And I've told you that many times. It's the one common trait amongst really good coordinators is a maniacal obsession to detail.
Yeah.
And that again goes back to, man, there's lots of guys that can scheme stuff up on the whiteboard. It's the attention to detail. Vic Fangio was like that. I mean, when it's one thing to come up with a scheme, it's another thing to teach a guy when you should be aligned 6 inches to the left or against this formation, you got to tweak it. You got to be 6 inches to the right. Yeah. All of that finer stuff. Vic is really, really good at coaching. So I love hearing attention to detail whenever somebody gets up and talks about keys to running a good offense.
Yes, and I can't wait to see it in July at training camp. I hope that everything that he's preaching yesterday are things that we see on the field when training camp rolls around. Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, shifting gears real quick. The quarterback carousel has started to rotate a little bit here with some fun smoke. I don't know how much of it turns into anything, but the two stories yesterday. Saw this story, Seth, about the Jags or the Steelers making a phone call to the Jags about trading for Trevor Lawrence yesterday?
Yeah.
Which is getting enough attention from people who are above the level of Nugget Hussy that I respect. You know, they are Nugget Hussies, all of them. But it's getting enough attention from people who I think they wouldn't be touching this topic if it were just some sort of false smoke. I mean, again, it's a phone call. Like, the Steelers calling about about Trevor Lawrence. I believe the Jags have come out and said, we're not trading Trevor Lawrence. But that I think
that's
it's
what they all say before somebody gets traded. But yeah.
Yeah. But it's been acknowledged from both sides that it's happened. I think what's interesting is, boy, it's definitely not a hang up the phone thing for me if I were the new GM of the Jaguars right now. Because that contract, I know people are going to say, but he just signed that big contract. You're going to get crushed with dead money. Mike Florio kind of laid it out really good in an article. You'd get killed with dead money if you're the Jags, if you cut Trevor Lawrence, because then all the guaranteed money, you got to pay him.
Yeah.
When you trade him, a lot of those guarantees are in the future in terms of future salaries and things like that. When you trade him, the team that's trading for him inherits a lot of those guarantees. Now, there would be dead money because they paid him a signing bonus. There's a roster bonus coming up here in a few weeks at the start of the league year, about $35 million. From my understanding is if they were to trade Trevor Lawrence, and I don't think they will, but it's fun to kick it around on Sports Talk Radio, they would get hit with about $30 million. But man, if you're getting a couple firsts for Trevor Lawrence, that might be worth it to start over again.
If you're getting a couple of firsts, and then the question becomes, all right, do you load up with those draft picks to try to trade up for one of these quarterbacks in this year's draft? Or do you look at it as, hey, we're going to clear the deck of all of the Trevor Lawrence dead money as much as possible this year, and then we'll try to maneuver for next year's a quarterback in next year's draft. That's hard, man. As we've seen time and time again, it's hard to be the worst team in the NFL. It just doesn't work. There's always somebody else out there just trying to clamor for it, and I'd be skeptical that this gets done. I can see it from the Steelers' perspective, and especially with Mike Tomlin. Tomlin's stuck in this position where, man, they are consistently a winning football team every single year. But for the last, how many years is it now since Ben Roethlisberger got definitively old? It's been 5 years or so.
Yeah, like the COVID year, yeah.
Yeah, you've gone from the Ben Roethlisberger sputtering on fumes the last couple years to a Kenny Pickett to a Russell Wilson. And there's only so much you can do with quarterbacks like that. And at the very least, all right, you take Mike Tomlin and give him a good quarterback, they're probably making exploratory calls all over the place.
Yeah, here's where Trevor Lawrence is interesting to me, Seth, specifically to the Steelers, is that, look, if you're trading for Trevor Lawrence in that contract and you're giving up high draft capital to do it, you're obviously doing that with the idea that he's going to be your guy for the foreseeable future, for like several years. I do think it's interesting that Arthur Smith is the offensive coordinator with Pittsburgh, and that Arthur Smith, at his peak, when he was the most well thought of as an offensive mind, it was with a really athletic quarterback with a strong arm, maybe a little scatter shot, but could probably play well in a first read play action type thing with Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee.
And just like with Trevor Lawrence, Ryan Tannehill could run. He could run well enough to really make the RPOs and the zone reads work, and that was part of the play action as well.
I could see Trevor Lawrence being like a souped up Ryan Tannehill in an Arthur Smith offense. Like that part makes personnel sense to me. Now the thing is, if they get really good at it, Arthur Smith is going to get another look at a head coaching job somewhere down the road. You know, there's nothing keeping them from keeping that offense in place. But I think if they were to make that trade, I think the Steelers become at least a one or two win better team than they were with Russell Wilson running the offense last year.
Okay, now I want the Trevor Lawrence trade to happen just because of this. It's the kind of year where both those quarterbacks and Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, they're not widely regarded as, oh yeah, slam dunk, got to take those guys in the top three. They probably will go in the top three just because people are so desperate for quarterbacks.
Because quarterbacks, yes.
But it might be, it might not be, it could be a year where you could reasonably trade up into the second or third pick overall to get one of those two guys. And it might blow up completely in your face, but I would love it for the drama in the division.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to have Shedeur Sanders in Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be fantastic. Yeah. I would be really excited about that.
Well, I think there's a good chance we get at least one of them in Tennessee. You know, like we're, you know, with the Titans getting that first pick. But, oh, yeah, could you imagine, like, the Titans draft Cam Ward with the first pick, and then the Jacksonville's able to flip their draft capital to get up and get Shedeur. These teams that are talking about making trades to get draft capital, like, for example, the other one that I would touch on here was Colin Cowherd yesterday with rumors surrounding Matthew Stafford to the Giants for the third overall pick.
So I am going to propose something. I made a couple of calls yesterday, a couple of texts this morning. Yesterday I was talking to a longtime NFL exec, and he said, this is not crazy. The Rams like Matt Stafford, but they're tiring of the constant quarterback talk, his wife saying things publicly. They like him, but they don't want to restructure his deal and give him a big contract. Meanwhile, the Giants do not like the quarterback class, and Brian Daboll, the head coach, and Joe Shane, the GM, have got to win or they'll be fired by Thanksgiving. What the Rams want, I'm told, they want the Giants' first-round pick at number 3.
So who says no, Seth? The Giants or the Rams, the number 3 overall pick to L.A. for Matthew Stafford to go to a Giants team that is, I think, much more than a quarterback away from a Super Bowl right now.
Right. Yeah, and boy, I think it's the Giants that have to say no on that. But because it's also, that's a king's ransom no matter what you do with that pick. A number 3 overall for Matt Stafford at this stage of his career.
Yeah.
And I could see, I'm skeptical that Sean McVay wanted Matt Stafford over Jared Goff for a reason. He wanted the veteran savvy. He wanted all of those things. And I don't think any of these guys project to be a Matt Stafford type of quarterback. So I don't know, man.
Well,
I don't know if the Rams, I mean, the Rams would say no, maybe based on that.
Number 3,
you don't have to take a quarterback with him.
No, you don't. Well, here's what Cowherd, the cut got a little long, so that's why I cut it off right there. But Cowherd went on to say that the solution would be bringing Aaron Rodgers in as a bridge quarterback, taking that number 3 pick and trying to turn it into more picks to load up next year in 2026, which is a much better quarterback draft, to try to use those picks to move up and get one of the guys in that draft. So, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to the solution there. I just think it's fascinating that, and by the way, Adam Schefter poured cold water all over everything Cowherd said yesterday on some show that he was on. I forget which one. But these are just fun things to think about, man. It's so much fun now that quarterbacks move a lot more now in the offseason than they used to, you know?
There's something about that in throwing Aaron Rodgers out there that reawakens something in me about Aaron Rodgers and wanting to see him with yet another spot.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, we couldn't make a go of it with the Jets. Oh, I don't know. Was Aaron Rodgers supposed to be the guy that fixed the Jets?
Did you see they did like a goodbye tweet to him yesterday, the Jets did? Like,
well, on their team, they've had a lot of special times together.
It was one of those tweets where they, like, it's a back shot of him like walking off into the sunset in his Jets uniform. Yeah. Like, thanks for everything you did for us, 8. You know, like when they call you by your number, there's that sort of affectionate.
Yeah, he's not even. He's like, you're so affectionately. Call you remember 8. All the fond. How many victories did he
Five.
Deliver on to the Jets?
5.
Yeah. One of them against the Texans.
4 snaps in 1 year and 5 wins in the end. One of them against the Texans, exactly.
This goes back across multiple schemes and regimes now. The Texans' defense in the last couple years has had some really annoyingly bad performances against bad teams. But they have also now, going back to Eli Manning, and now Aaron Rodgers, there's somebody that I'm forgetting. They've given some aging quarterbacks like their final stab at glory.
Yeah.
Eli Manning was on fire at NRG Stadium.
Yeah.
In his last season.
His last good game he ever had. Yeah.
Yeah. He just carved him up over the middle.
Mock draft injection. What are the experts trying to dish to the Texans at 25? Kind of like the one we're about to do. I'm not going to lie. We do it every day during draft season at this time. We'll do it coming up next, your daily mock draft injection.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Action.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
So in y'all's wild possible trade scenario, this is a text to the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. In y'all's wild possible trade scenario, the AFC South quarterbacks are Anthony Richardson, Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, along with some guy named CJ Stroud. Stop it. I can only get so aroused.
Now, here's the thing about Anthony Richardson. I do not think by anybody's stretch of any imagination, no matter how grand and ludicrous, is he the quarterback of the future for the Colts. But on any given Sunday, he terrifies me.
Yeah.
He's a sub 50% passer in the year 2025. But he makes up for with some incredible throws at times and his legs. And it, the problem is his legs are only healthy about 50% of the time.
Right.
So it does, you're not gonna win the division or win a Super Bowl or a playoff game very often with him. But on any given Sunday, I am petrified of him because he can single-handedly destroy you with a couple of plays.
Here's the thing, Ian, and this is a good segue actually into what we're about to do because we're about to do the daily mock draft injection. The fact of the matter is, if you're a Texan fan, you should want these teams spitballing on all these quarterbacks because if you look at the hit rate on quarterbacks, there's a much better chance that these teams are doing further damage to their team than curing their ills. I mean, just look at the drafts. Now, last year's draft is an exception. There are a few guys. Like, I think Caleb Williams is going to wind up being pretty good with Ben Johnson. Jaden Daniels had the best rookie year of any quarterback maybe ever. Including C.J. Stroud. Bo Nix was very good in Denver. Michael Penix is going to be the guy in Atlanta. Like, Drake May did some good things for New England. So there's a lot to like about this past season's rookie class. Prior to that, there was a three-year window where other than C.J. Stroud, there was really nobody. And I'll include Trevor Lawrence in that. Everybody thinks there's more people think Trevor Lawrence's contract is an albatross than some sort of foundation Jacksonville has built. You should want Tennessee to take one of these quarterbacks with the first overall pick.
I'll tell you what. This year, if you look at the final four teams that were in the playoffs, there's a lot to be said for, man, that was a great illustration of not being desperate to take a quarterback.
Yeah.
You have Jalen Hurts, who was drafted in the second round, and they're desperately trying to say, oh, no, this has nothing to do with Carson Wentz, whatever, he's the guy. Jalen Hurts worked out pretty damn well, I would say. You look at Pat Mahomes, not a top five quarterback.
Nope.
Where did Mahomes go?
Tenth.
Josh Allen was what?
Seventh.
So right. And then you have, who am I leaving out here?
Lamar Jackson was 32nd.
Lamar Jackson 32nd.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, things have equalized a lot. And now the prospect of trading for a veteran like Matt Stafford or Tom Brady, you look at the guys that have gotten to the Super Bowl or two divisional rounds over the last several years. And it's moving way far away from, man, you got to take a quarterback number one or two or three overall. I mean, so far, I know Bryce Young made a lot of progress in the second half of this last season, but I still think even there, yes, CJ was a top two pick, but he wasn't the most highly regarded, apparently, quarterback in that draft. And I still like him a lot better than Bryce Young.
Yes.
So, I like people being desperate to get a quarterback in the top three picks because it's feeling more desperate than it used to.
No doubt.
We're in a weird spot where people are really, really, really desperate for quarterbacks, and yet teams have done a really good job of finding them outside of the top three and having successful teams.
Yep. All right, let's get to the mock draft injection for the day. This is Dan Parr of NFL.com. Dan Parr, he's one of the army of NFL.com writers who do mock drafts on here. So let's get right to it. The aggregate so far has had the Texans taking an offensive lineman, various names, but with other positions sprinkled in. Let's see what Dan Parr has to say here. There's no trades going on. It's just with the 25th overall pick in the Dan Parr NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Emeka Ebuka, wide receiver, Ohio State. Here's what he says. With Stephon Diggs and Robert Woods headed for free agency, with Tank Dell working his way back from a severe injury, there's a gaping void at receiver in Houston. The Texans do right by their quarterback and reunite C.J. Stroud with his fellow Buckeye. I know you're an Emeka Ebuka fan, Seth, right?
I do, and partly because if you look at a guy that doesn't go really high in the draft as a wide receiver, okay, he's not going to have those elite physical traits. And just not, if he has electrifying speed, it's usually that he's not that big, and vice versa. Or if he's huge and he's just not all that fast. I think Ebuka is a good blend of strengths and weaknesses, but where he makes up with some of the, I guess, weaknesses as a prospect in terms of elite speed. He does some nuanced things with his route running. He does some things that just show he's got a really good feel for the game of football. He understands coverages and how to adjust his routes to coverages. Some of the stuff that a lot of young wide receivers struggle to adapt to in the NFL, I feel like he could be the kind of guy that does it well.
Yeah.
So if you're taking a guy with the 25th pick in the first round, that it makes sense for him there. That there's some of the elite traits that are holding him back. But some of the things that you, some of the things that the guys with elite traits never figure out, how to adjust to coverages, just the nuances of the route running, I feel like he's got a lot of potential in those regards. So just it makes a lot of sense.
Can he get open? That's the big question. Can he get? Can he get? That's a bit, and that's a big question for any receiver that they draft. The Texans were very clear last year, going into either last year or 2 years ago, whenever it was. There, Nick and D'Amico, I think it was D'Amico's answer, was asked, what do you look for in receivers? And he's like, guys that can get open, guys that can move the chains. However they do it, they get open. And Ibuka, you know, some guys do it because they're super twitchy and quick, like Tank Dell. Other guys do it with their brains, like you just said, Seth. Yeah. They're able to kind of read what the defense is doing. They've got that telepathic thing going on with their quarterback, and there's just a chemistry there. Presumably, that would be what Ibuka getting open would be built on.
And he's got a swarm quality to him. Like, he's gritty. Like, after the catch, it's not like he's got that real burst where you're like, oh, crap, boy, he's going to destroy them in the run after the catch. But he'll stiff arm dudes. He's got a toughness to him that, again, when you're talking about taking a wide receiver with the 25th pick or in the second round, perhaps, that you feel good about that part of it. And then even like the simpler things, and now maybe I'm in love with ball tracking more than I should because Derek Stingley is so good at it on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, he played baseball, and a lot of people have pointed to that. Like, man, it seems like he sees the ball and adjusts to the ball the way a baseball player would. And so some of those harder-to-measure traits, but that the scouts pick up on, I think he has a lot of those things that the studied eye, like people with better eyes than I do, really gush about with him.
If I had to guess, just based on this particular mock draft, if you and I were sitting with each other at the draft party and the board looked the way it did in this mock draft, this would be the guy, as we're sitting there with the Texans on the clock at 25, that you would want at that moment, because guys off the board at this point in this particular mock, Membu kid who we talked about from Mizzou yesterday goes 10th in this draft.
Yeah.
Tyler Booker off the board at 13. Matthew Golden from Texas, wide receiver, off the board at 21. And then the apple of your eye on the defensive front, Kenneth Grant of Michigan, goes off the board at 22. I would guess if you and I were sitting there, you would be hoping for Ibuka at this point, based on all those guys being off the board.
Yeah, and I think just given that, I mean, just so many teams have done so well with wide receivers taken in the second. Oh, the Houston Texans, for instance, yeah. Late in the first round or in the second round. If you've got other good wide receivers that he can work with, like Nico Collins, I just feel really good about. I feel really good about the potential for what they could do. And I do think the offensive line will be better just by virtue of having an offensive coordinator who genuinely cares and focuses on the offensive line and understands has had more exposure to the entire 11 guys on offense and how it all works together. And Nick Caley more so than Bobby Slowick.
These Ohio State receivers, too, that have all gone off the... Ohio State's had, like, two guys in, like, every draft for the last two or three. Like, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, I mean, they're none of them are all pros yet or anything, but they've all proven they can play.
Well, and they also, you know, with the Ohio State, they'll run option routes and things where the wide receiver has to read the coverage and adjust his route based on the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
You like seeing that compared to guys that are in schemes in college where it's like the route is the route. Maybe we'll have you run two or three of them and that's it. Ibuka's just a lot more polished on that side in making a transition to the NFL.
All right, Payne and Pendergast.
As far as the offensive line, I thought about this. Ever since that one guy who got super, super angry with me about my take on Gray.
Zabel.
The hard part I have with watching offensive linemen is there's not a single offensive line prospect that I ever look at where... Like, you look at college offensive linemen, and as a defensive lineman, the way they're playing in college, you're like, oh, yep, he'd get dumped on his face hardcore, right? They all have to make improvements in their technique. And it's just, and it sticks out to me even more so than with defensive linemen because you watch this for years and years and years, and you play against those guys. So it's hard for me sometimes to get over. There's guys that get drafted at offensive line that have all the physical traits, but they just never figure out how to play with good technique. So I'm skeptical of all of them, but there's really good reasons to get excited about pretty much every interior offensive lineman that we've seen in a mock draft for the Texans.
Payne and Pendergast, we head into the 8 o'clock hour. Let's circle back to the Astros. How's upper management feeling about this Alex Bregman deal with the Astros? We'll get to that. and a whole lot more from pitchers and catchers in West Palm Beach. Seth and I will be there in about 10 days covering it for all of you here on Sports Radio 610. Also, quick reminder, our Slam Dunk in Vegas contest that we've got going on. You just listen for an hour each day on the Odyssey app, and you could win a contest to get to Vegas for the college basketball tournament in March at Circa Resort and Casino, and party while you're watching basketball with an extra $20K in your pocket in Vegas. Download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day. You'll get your daily entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest.